Subway has teamed up with Live Nation to bring you great food and great music for a great value. Right now, buy a Subway $5 footlong and get a Live Nation concert ticket for $5 to participating Live Nation shows like Nickelback, The Fray, and Crew Fest 2. Ticket price does not include fees. See store for details. Subway. Eat fresh.
Eat fresh.
The BS Report is a free-flowing conversation that occasionally touches on mature subjects.
First of all,
this is the BS Report with Bill Simmons.
It might be cool, I don't know. And if it's not, I don't care.
The BS Report with Bill Simmons.
Bill Simmons works for ESPN. He's also named the sports guy, and he writes a comical sports column. He must be a popular dude.
The BS Report.
It's got a real dirty sound, like a rusty steak knife cutting through a well-aged steak.
Now.
Here's Bill Simmons.
Welcome to the BS Report. Sorry for the lack of columns this week. I took a little mini vacation. And I know you're thinking, but wait, you're always on vacation. You don't write that much. But actually, I'm still recovering from working on a book for 2 years, but I'm trying to rest up so I have all my stamina for September and beyond, because we're getting into the heart of my columns, September through June. That's when it matters. That's when the bread is buttered. Anyway, big Yankee Red Sox series this weekend. As always, we call our friend Jacko, one of my best friends, diehard Yankee fan, and he's on the Subway Fresh Take hotline right now. Let's call him.
Complex Litigation, this is John.
Oh, Johnny.
Well, you certainly sound better than last week.
Hey, we're only 6.5 games back, man.
That's true. That's true.
Five weeks to play. We're still in this thing, man.
Absolutely. Not
Got
over yet.
Penny going on Friday, Tozawa going on Saturday. You're feeling the pressure a little.
I am. I admit it. It could be another choke. I agree.
Brad Penny, who can't pitch five innings without giving up five runs. We got him going tonight. Feeling good about that.
You get the emotional lift of Jerry Remy's return to the booth tonight, though.
You know, don't think I haven't factored that into my enthusiasm for tonight.
I know. That's one of those weird things could happen when stuff like, you know, a little emotional lift. Yeah.
It's going to be a little emotional.
Too. There's going to be a little misty when Jerry Remy returns.
Yeah, I'm more excited that the carousel of hit or miss Ness and color analysts is finally over.
Let me tell you, I watched some of their game last night and in the preceding evenings, because the Yankees didn't play till 10 o'clock. Frank Viola leaves a little bit to be desired in the booth.
You weren't a fan of Frank?
Not a huge fan. No.
I loved him because he sounded exactly like Neil O'Donnell.
Yeah, I was brought here to win games.
I'm a winner. The Jets are winners. Every time he talked, I was having Neil O'Donnell flashbacks. I loved it. I'm a winner. I've been to a Super Bowl. But it took me like a week to figure out who he sounded like, because I wanted to go with Francesa, but he didn't totally sound like Francesa.
Right.
Oh, speaking of that, random tangent. I was getting emails yesterday that after the Plaxico Burress sentence got handed down, Francesa had various inmates calling in, or former inmates, talking about what life in prison would be like for Plaxico.
That's true. I came back from lunch yesterday, and a guy, first of all, he had like about a 10-minute conversation with a guy who claimed to be a former New York City prosecutor who now worked in the U.S. Attorney's Office. So he was talking about how Plaxico, like, basically if it was you or I, and we were a first-time offender, and we carried a gun into New York, and we got arrested, and we weren't committing any other crimes in the process, we would, like, automatically get 6 months in jail and 5 months probation. But because he was Plaxico, he got much more of a raw deal. And this guy was all inflamed about it. So he hangs up, and then another guy calls up, and he's like, this is Joe from Albany or whatever. That wasn't his name or his town, but whatever. And he's like, I come at it from a little different perspective because I just did a six-year stretch upstate. And then he talked about, like, what Plaxico is going to face and when he first goes into prison and what happens and somebody calculates your time and all the things that he would experience. So, yeah.
Were any of those experiences sex with another man?
No, I didn't listen to the whole thing because then I got back to work. But it was more about, like, the administrative aspects and the processing and what have you. I didn't hear the part if he really got into anything that, you know, what goes on in prison behind closed doors.
Hey, Joe from Albany. Let's talk about forcible rape.
Joe, you ever dropped the soap? Is that true? What they have in the movies?
Joe, were you ever somebody's boyfriend? Because you felt like you had to be. It sounded great, though. I was getting a ton of emails about it. Anytime Francesa delves into some sort of weird subject like prison life.
Yeah, oh, yeah. That's what was entertaining.
Yeah. It should really be – they should have a better podcast where it should be like the eccentricities of Mike Francesa podcast.
Right. He talks about anything but sports.
Weird discussions. What has dominated in the New York radio waves these days? Plaques?
Plaques was a huge deal yesterday.
The Yanks?
Wednesday, he spent an enormous amount of time on Favre. And he kind of took the contrarian position on Favre, which I was surprised by, that, you know, if Favre wants to come back, he should be able to come back. It's America. They're giving him $12 million. Why do sports writers care?
That's what I hate about it. That's why I stay away from stories like that. It's like you got to pick your side and then argue your side. Why can't he do it? Or then you go the other way. Brett, you're humiliating your legacy.
Right.
What does Brett Favre care?
Right.
I actually liked what he said. He said, like, you know, it's my legacy.
Yeah.
The only one who ultimately cares about that is me. I don't care what you guys think.
Right.
I'm going to remember that when I keep my column going 20 years after it should have ended.
When you're wishing happy birthdays to people.
I'm going to Vegas with my friends. I'm 62. Running diary of Old Man's Weekend in Vegas. People are like, no, retire Simmons for the love of God. I come down on this side. I just like the Favre thing because the two games when he plays the Packers are going to be just fantastic. I actually, on Twitter, I posted a link to our Lambo column that you were in multiple times.
Excellent.
When we went 3 years ago. And at the time, I don't think any of us could have conceived that Brett Favre would ever play for another team.
No, my God, no.
And I think the analogy I used was that I had some joke in there about how if he ever left, what would happen. And we decided it would be like Apocalypse Now, the end of the last 30 minutes after Kurtz gets killed. These people would just – society would fall apart and people would be just – it would revert back to the most basic primitive forms. And instead, it seems like they're really kind of angry at him.
Yeah, and now he's gone to a huge rival. I mean, when he went to the Jets, it provided the necessary healing period so everybody could sort of deal with their grief and mourn in their own way.
Yeah.
But now he's playing for a although I think their biggest rival is the Bears, but he's going to another team in the same division that sort of fashions itself a rival of the Packers. So
the Central.
He's going to be fired up about that. And, you know, I wouldn't normally care about a Packers-Vikings game except for fantasy implications, but it's must-watch TV when he goes back there on November 1st now.
Well, and also October 5th, they play in Minnesota.
I mean, that's interesting, too, but the super interesting one is when he goes back to Green Bay.
Yeah.
I hope he stays healthy enough to get to that game. It would be such a letdown if he gets knocked out in week 4 or something.
Yeah, that would suck. I didn't think of that.
And the guy's 40 years old. It's a legitimate concern.
I saw a rough cut last night of the Wayne Gretzky documentary that we're doing for 30 for 30.
Mm-hmm.
And when Gretzky goes back to Edmonton, you know, it's really super emotional, but the Edmonton fans were on his side.
Really, yeah.
You know, because
he
basically got traded because the owner was like, how much money?
Yeah.
$15 million? And how many draft picks?
Right.
And so nobody really blamed Gretzky. Although there was like an interesting turn where they kind of started to blame Janet Jones like being a Yoko Ono, which I had totally forgotten. But when he went back to Edmonton, you know, he was nervous about how are they going to respond to me and all that stuff. But it was very emotional. The Packer thing is going to be much more interesting with Favre.
That's it's a very good analogy to Gretzky, too, because they're both small towns that have no other professional sports team, nor
totally.
Ever will.
Edmonton's the NHL version of the Packers.
Oh, yeah. That's very true. And you figure, like, when we went to that Packers game and 75% of the crowd was wearing Favre jerseys. I mean, way back when, 75% of Edmonton had to be in Gretzky jerseys, right?
Will you ever forget when we were in the pro shop and they had the sign that jerseys were available in 3XL and 4XL?
And up.
It's special orders, 5 and 6.
Exactly.
I'm so glad I wrote that column because I guess that's one of the good things about my job is sometimes you write this stuff down like a great weekend. You can kind of relive it through print. But, you know, the thing we all took away from that weekend was that Favre was bigger than life.
Oh, yeah. I still can't really wrap my – having been there for one weekend, granted, but I still can't wrap my head around the fact that he's not a Packer anymore. And now coming in a different uniform, I just can't imagine what that's going to be like.
Well, it was our running joke that weekend that just everybody had a Favre jersey. There was no
literally.
There was no variety. It was just like, yeah, you have to wear a Favre jersey. It's like a uniform almost.
We saw like two guys in an AJ Hawk jersey trying to hedge their bets for the future, but they were ahead of the curve. But literally, 75% of the crowd was in a Favre jersey.
And there was like
a smattering of Reggie White here and there for nostalgia, but basically it was all Favre all the time.
Yeah, the four black fans that were there, I think, were the black player jerseys. I think it was like Charles Woodson or whoever. But yeah, it was like all Favre. And it was really kind of creepy to be there. Because you look around, everywhere you look, there is a Favre number four jersey. The only difference was whether it was green or white. But you're like, whoa. Yeah, whoa. And not to mention that they were in all types of sizes.
Well, I was going to say,
those jerseys.
The other difference is the guy wearing it was 400 pounds, but...
In the column, there was a part where we were driving to Green Bay
from Milwaukee, yeah.
And that the car of women passed us to the left.
Yeah,
it might have been pushing about 1,000 pounds in the car. And all of us looked over, and there was a beat, and you said, "I called shotgun on Reggie White." I think that was your finest moment. We had a little email exchange about it this week. I think it's your all-time funniest joke.
Thank you. I appreciate that. It's so
you really
hard
had to be there.
One, but
yeah, you really had to be there to see how big the Reggie White jersey girl was. But
yeah.
But you know, the other thing when I reread that column.
And there was four guys in our car, so it was just so perfectly fitting.
Oh, it was a perfect match for us. The disappointment came back when I was reading about it, when Chip passed up Bean Stampers on the way home. In Appleton,
still,
Wisconsin.
To this day, a big regret.
We never found out what happened at a true strip joint in the middle of nowhere, Wisconsin.
We should go back for the November 1st game. We should go back for the Packers Vikings to finish the story. And the story would be finished by stopping at Bean Snappers this time.
Oh, yeah, unfortunately, that Packers game, which I really did think, I thought, yeah, let's go to that. Mm-hmm. You know, it could be fun, but it's right when my book tore us.
Wow, there you go.
So unless I do
a
signing...
You're not taking a tour of Milwaukee for the Bucks?
Well, as much as I'd love to, I don't think that's on the initial list.
No.
Yeah. I think... you know what we might do? We've been talking about a Midnight Madness signing when the book comes out at midnight, October 27th, which is a late Monday night, but would be a Tuesday, in Washington, D.C.
Oh, that's cool.
Because there's a Redskins game that night, Monday Night Football.
Oh.
And we could... parlay that into my question is, would anyone show up to get a book signed at midnight? I guess if I pre-sign them.
Yeah.
I don't know. I have faith in the people of Washington. There's like 10 colleges there.
Absolutely.
Plus, I was thinking of I'd have a Patino table. there's be some female fan at the end of the night I'll pick to take her into the back. Do you think pulling a Patino has replaced pulling a Fredo?
Oh, definitely. Oh, yeah. He does. It's the whole. There's going to be so many jokes. It's ridiculous. It's just, you can't go wrong with it. It's fantastic.
What do you think the $3,000 was for? In all seriousness.
What do I think it was for? I think it was for her to get an abortion.
Yeah.
I mean, his notion of it was to buy health care. What kind of health care do you think she needed? She just told him.
Well, the other part is healthcare is more expensive than $3,000, unless you're getting the worst healthcare ever.
Yeah, insurance is going to run you more than that, I would think.
It's unbelievable. I mean, I got Sports Illustrated yesterday, which I urge everyone to read just for the Selena Roberts picture in the back.
Yeah, what was up with that?
I don't know what they're thinking with those columnist photos, but I hope it continues. And in fact, I don't want to jinx it.
In last week's, is that Phil Taylor?
Yeah.
Yeah, what was up with that? His picture, like it's like action shots now?
Apparently.
I don't get it.
Apparently I need an action shot to read an 800-word column.
You should do the Isaac the Bartender, like, finger, thumb, point, like the guns. That's what I want to see yours. I want to see, like, the double guns with your fingers. Bill Simmons.
I was thinking of doing that. I was going to just put it on Twitter, like twit pics.
Yeah.
Just pictures of me imitating the Sports Illustrated column photos.
I want the double finger guns.
I just love that anything in a magazine could get to that point where that's the final decision. I love them. Those photos are great. Read them. Done it, done.
Yeah, I don't know what's up with that.
They had a Patino article in there, and as I was disappointed when it was over. It wasn't very long, and I was realizing that there couldn't be a Patino feature long enough about the night of August 1st, 2003, or whatever it was. There is no word length that I'm not plowing through.
No pun intended.
It's the weirdest story ever. Like, why did she marry the equipment manager?
Well, her claim is, in the New York Post, she claimed that Patino paid the guy to marry her to, like, shut her up.
But why wouldn't he just give her the money?
I don't know.
Why did he have to pay somebody else to marry her? Like, it's such a weird story. It's arguably the weirdest story of this decade.
It's incredible. It's incredible that it was kept secret for 6 years. I mean, you forget that it happened 6 years ago. And it's all just coming out now or recently, you know?
She had a daughter. And she was a little top heavy.
Yeah, I know. I saw a picture of her recently, and I was a little intrigued. Just kidding.
Patino's checking her out with the Michael Corleone look.
Exactly.
Why don't we go in the back, and I'll tell you my plans for the full court press this season.
Here's how you break down the zone.
Let me explain to you why Walter McCarty was the best press person I've ever coached. Come on in the back. We'll have some chicken fingers.
Yeah.
What about the assistant who was asleep?
Yeah, I like that. He was just in the restaurant, and he confessed to what he heard.
That brought back memories to me about the time that I dragged you over in 1994 to a place that we've joked about ever since. But
yeah,
you were like my Joe Esposito.
I was. I was like the assistant coach.
Do you think Patino has to resign?
Well, I would think so. I mean, if it was me, I would do it just for my own dignity. I couldn't take the heckling and just everywhere I went, people pointing and whispering and talking about it. I mean, I know he'll get that in life, but it's so much more magnified when you're a college basketball coach. I mean,
yes.
The Cameron Crazies at Duke, their whole thing is just to, you know, completely belittle people. Now, they don't play Duke, I don't think, but you tell me it's not going to be awful when they go to play Kentucky? Their biggest rival? I mean, the crowd's going to murder them. I would just go home and count my money, try and reconcile with my wife or become a single guy then and just say, hey, I'm Rick Pitino. But I wouldn't go deal with the rigors of college coaching and getting murdered in every single arena.
He's made an insane amount of money. He certainly doesn't need any more.
Not to mention that it's not going to come up in every single pregame interview for the entire season.
I'm going to say Pitino's first season, so I'm going to say Christmas 97.
First season as the Celtics coach.
Yes.
Yep.
I was at, it was like a Lord & Taylor's or somewhere. It was at the Prudential Center, the men's store. And Patino happened to be there, and he was buying all these ties. And I was just, you know, at that point, not a lot of celebrities passing through Boston, so you're kind of doing that transfix thing.
Mm-hmm.
Just watching him buy ties. I'll be honest, I would have had sex with him.
He's a good-looking man, huh?
Good-looking guy, a lot of magnetism. If there'd been a table in the back, I might have thought about it.
Well, his
table for four? Nice comfy booth? I don't know. Could have talked me into something.
On a similar vein, I asked my wife the other day if she'd be bummed out if I left her for Mark Teixeira. A lot of things would have to go. You know, there's a lot of hoops to jump through for that to occur, but, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah, because I really am a huge Mark Teixeira fan.
But, I know, you love Mark Teixeira.
But back to Patino. You know, his big assistant now is former Holy Cross Crusader, Ralph Willard.
Yes.
Ralph Willard left Holy Cross to go be an assistant at Louisville.
Yes.
Maybe they knew this was going to break, and he wanted a friend there, his best friend there, to console him and comfort him in his times of trouble.
Well, the other interesting part was that his son, Rick Pitino Jr., Richard Pitino, whatever he goes by, he ended up getting a job at, I think, Florida.
Oh, really?
To be Billy Donovan's right-hand man. This happened like 3 months ago. And at the time, I was like, oh, that's nice. He got his son. Now you wonder if he just was like, hey, son.
You're going to hear some things.
Yeah. You want to get out now. I don't mean to make light of it because it's a terrible story. But at the same time, you know.
Oh, yeah.
A married guy in the back room of some table in some Louisville restaurant. I mean, I do feel like it deserves to be mocked a little bit.
Oh, it's crazy.
It's a horrible judgment.
And then that she marries the strength coach for Louisville or something. I mean,
the equipment manager.
The equipment manager. I don't get that at all. That's really odd.
Who had followed Patino, was with Patino in Boston.
Yeah. And then they see each other, at, you know, Louisville functions or whatever, team parties or Christmas parties, and he's like, hey, how are you?
Hey!
And what does the husband think? Her husband. Oh, yeah, there's Rick Pitino. You had sex with him on the floor of a restaurant.
I was wondering, does anyone have less self-esteem? Can you imagine?
No, I can't.
Day in, day out, there's the coach who had his way with your wife on a table.
Yeah, I don't get that.
Some restaurant?
That would be a rough one for me.
All right, well, I just told about 7 jokes just to make Jacko and Joe Mead laugh about Patino. None of them will make the make the final cut. Although, something will tell me Joe Mead will store those on a secret tape and then extort me later on for $3,000.
Someday there'll be like a podcast after dark that will be released uncensored on the DVD box set.
You mean someday? You mean January 1st, 2011? let's talk about the Yanks and the Red Sox.
All right.
So you just professed your love for Prince William, Mark Teixeira.
Yes.
Who
indeed.
Also looks a little like Whitney in the Hills, as some readers have pointed out, but looks like one of those faces that looks like a bunch of different people. But
yeah, I see the Prince William one. I don't know about the Whitney one, but all right.
Well, imagine him with long hair and a cocktail dress, no?
Oh, I have, but... I don't know. I don't know if I see that one.
All right. Well, he has certainly swung the rivalry. I think CeCe has helped.
CeCe's been red hot in the second half.
AJ Burnett has stayed healthy, which is nice for you.
Yeah, he's been good.
Phil Hughes has been reinvented as a setup guy.
Been great.
Johnny Damon in a contract year. I got to say, like, you do that Johnny Damon contract again.
Oh, God, yeah. I want them to re-sign him. I never thought, I wouldn't think I'd be saying that, but I want them to re-sign him. Especially with Matsui not there next year, they can DH Damon more.
It's funny. The Red Sox made two kind of big, well, I guess you could say three. You got to throw in Pedro. So Derek Lowe was going. They weren't going to re-sign him. But Pedro, they argued about. Johnny Damon, they argued about. And Cabrera, they argued about.
Right.
So with Cabrera, they decide to let him go, and they sign Edgar Renteria. That's a disaster. 5 years later, they're still trying to – the shortstop is still this black hole vortex.
Right.
Johnny Damon, they let go.
Mm-hmm.
They decide that his stats are on the decline. Defensively, he's a nightmare. His best years are behind him. And that leads to eventually Coco Crisp, who doesn't really work out, and now Ellsbury in center, who I think maybe – I can't remember if they knew Ellsbury was potentially coming or not, but they felt confident.
He was in the minors.
He was in the minors, So so maybe they were hoping that maybe we have this guy or whatever. But I don't think you could say the Damon thing worked out either because Coco Crisp didn't work out. Pedro,
right.
I think, worked out.
Yeah.
I think that would not have been a good contract to have. But
no.
It's interesting that the Johnny Damon thing kind of sort of secretly has come back to haunt them a little bit.
I mean, they quibbled over $4 million with Damon because I think he ultimately signed for 52 for the Yankees and the Red Sox top offer was like 48.
Yeah.
So they're quibbling over $4 million. And I think those were what the numbers were. Unless it was four, it wasn't $4 million a year. I think it was a total of $4 million. And then they turn around and spend $14 million on J.D. Drew, who, even though he went 4-for-4 with 2 home runs last night, I mean, let's face it, he's been an enormous disappointment. He's not worth anywhere close to $14 million a year.
Yeah, I mean, he's
I know he had the big grand slam in 07, but...
He's a much better defensive player than Damon, I think. And
yeah, but...
They were in a phase where they were really, looking at defensive stats, and they were a little ahead of the curve on defensive stats, and they were really concerned about Damon's arm. You've seen Damon's arm.
Oh, he's terrible. Yeah, he's terrible defensively. He's terrible in the outfield. That's why I'd rather have him as a DH, but his swing is perfect for Yankee Stadium, and he's been a catalyst offensively. He's been huge for them. And
so
you can't argue that even though he's better defensively, that J.D. Drew is anywhere close to worth $14 million.
No. But, I mean, the problem is you couldn't play Damon in right field and they had Manny in left field. So that means you have to play him in center field where he didn't have the same range.
His defensive liabilities are shown more there. That's true.
So he hits 285, 359, 42 slugging in 2006, 24 homers. 80 RBI. 2007, slides, 270, 351 OBP, 396 slugging, 12 homers, 63 RBI. At that point, you're not feeling great about the contract.
No, I wasn't.
Last year, a little comeback.
Yeah, he was good last year.
303, 375, 461, 17 homers, 71 RBI, and more importantly, 29 steals, 8 caught stealing. So not bad.
Pretty good.
I should mention he had 27 steals the year before. This year... Contract here, 285, 365, 519.
Mm-hmm.
519 slugging. That must be just because of Yankee Stadium.
Yeah, his swing. I mean, he has that perfect uppercut swing for right field. So, worked out well, the new stadium.
That's the highest slugging he's ever had so far. 9-0 with steals, 22 homers, on pace for potentially high 20s, and 68 RBI. This is probably the best season of his career other than 2000 in Kansas City.
Yeah, he's been huge for them. He's always on base. I'd be curious how many runs he scored. I bet he scored a lot of runs too. He's always on base in front of guys.
He's so far he's 85.
Yeah, he's playing. He's having a really good year. I want them to re-sign him. I want a nice 2-year deal for Johnny. He might be happy in New York.
He kind of gave you what you thought Abreu was going to give you, but didn't.
Yeah, no, I think he's an upgrade over Abreu. Definitely, I'm much happier with Johnny.
Oh my lord! Do you know Johnny's home and away?
No, I know. It's ridiculous, I'm sure.
15 homers at home, 7 on the road.
You know what's funny is Nick Swisher has in the neighborhood of 20 home runs, and he's only hit like 4 or 5 at home, I believe. He's like
really?
The complete reverse, which is weird.
Johnny's got
on the road.
390 on base at home, 339 on the road, 589 slugging at home, 450 on the road. So he basically stumbles into the stadium that's perfect for him. If he's smart, he would stay.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely. He should, yeah. I mean, and he probably wants to go get, you know, I don't know how much money he's really going to get in the open market. I was going to say he wants to go get the most money, but I don't know how many offers he's going to get. If he was smart, he would absolutely stay there, and that stadium is made for him. He'll put up huge numbers, pad his career stats.
If I was a lefty, I would want to play in Yankee Stadium.
And oh, God, yeah.
If I was a starter, I would want to go for the American League to the National League and do what Cliff Lee is doing right now.
Absolutely, yeah.
I think who would be the MVP of the American League is far superior to the National League argument. Is it Cliff Lee or Matt Holliday or Julio Lugo?
It's really any of the three. Any of the three proved the point very well.
Cliff Lee goes over and he won the Cy Young last year, but he never looked like he did these last 4 starts.
No, he was he's been shaky this year, right?
He was up and down.
A terrible record, right?
Yeah, he was up and down. He'd come back a little before the trade, but. And then Matt Holliday goes over and he's freaking Hack Wilson.
I know. He couldn't do anything here in the American League, and then he goes over there and he's fantastic. Yeah, it proves the point once and for all. Is there anybody that went the opposite way, like somebody that came from the National to the American and was awful? To further prove the point.
I mean, are you trying to bait me into a John Smoltz response here?
Well, there you go. It
happens a lot.
That's a good one. Gonzalez, though, was hitting .210 for Cincinnati, and now he's been lighting the world on fire for the Sox.
Settle down. I think the ultimate example was when we got Jeff Supon, and he came over and he was just throwing meatballs. And then he went back to the National League and suddenly was a starter on a World Series team for the Cardinals. This is a guy we could not even throw out in 2003.
There you go.
But
it's been proven time and time again, in other words.
I just wish the National League fans would admit it. Admit that you have a couple good teams and that the vast majority of your league is a farce.
You're quadruple A and just deal with it.
Yeah.
You are what you are. These things are cyclical.
Unfortunately, what happened in 06, 06 with the Cards and 08 with the Phillies, you know, that kind of swung the quadruple A argument just a little bit.
Yeah, because they did win the World Series. True.
So how are you feeling about this series? If you win 1 of 3, you clinch the division, basically.
If they win 1 out of 3, I'll be happy. I'd like to get greedy and say, oh, if they go for the sweep, they put their, you know, foot on their necks and it's all over. But you can't get greedy. And the other thing that worries me is that a couple things worry me. One, on paper, the pitching matchups favor the Yankees, with the exception. Well, Sunday's game is kind of a wash, Beckett and Sabathia. But tonight favors the Yankees and tomorrow favors the Yankees. So that you have a feeling that's going to come back and turn things around. That'll flip on you. And secondly, the Sox play well at home. I mean, they play really well at home.
You mean 38-18?
Yeah, that well. So that makes you nervous. They'll be better there. So I just, like a Red Sox sweep would just be, I wouldn't say devastating, but it would be troubling. It would put a little fear back in me that I don't have. I feel relaxed about. It also worries me that Francesa yesterday on The Fan said, really, if you're a Yankees fan, there's nothing to talk about. You have to invent worries now. And I'm like, oh, don't say that. Don't say that. Don't toy with the gods, the baseball gods, by saying things like that.
Well, if the Sox win, we're 3 back. Loss column.
If you were to sweep, right?
Yes. So I think this is a must sweep. I mean, I personally, I'm going to stick to my guns. The 15-inning game broke the season.
Your spirit.
Yeah, we need some sort of miracle comeback, and I don't mean a comeback in like the comeback to win one game sense. There needs to be some sort of shift where somebody gets improbably hot, or we win like 3 games in a row in the last at bat. You know how in baseball stuff will happen and it kind of shifts the momentum of the season. And I think we're at that point. We need to win like a game where we're down 5-1 in the ninth, followed by a walk off the next day, and something to change the karma of the season. And it's just not happening.
I mean,
I actually thought last week against Texas, when they finally, they were the first team this year to get to Francisco.
Yeah, that Friday night game.
I was like, all right, this is beautiful. Here we go. Yep. And then the next two nights, Penny and Tozawa, boom.
Yeah.
So, you know, the other problem is that young Daniel Bard has – the Longoria homer started it.
Yeah.
The Yankees kind of finished it, and now he's just not – he's just kind of falling apart.
That 10-9 game, he put a lot of – he gave up a couple runs, right? The game they beat – they ended up beating Toronto, but they had, like, a huge lead, and they couldn't hold the lead.
Yeah, here's his stats starting with the Longoria game, 4.2 innings, eight hits, seven runs, three homers, and he's got, like, an over 12 ERA. That's not good.
No.
That was the guy we were relying on as our setup guy.
Yeah, he was supposed to be what Phil Hughes has been for the Yanks.
Phil Hughes, by the way, when was the last time he's given up a run?
He gave up a run a couple weeks ago, I believe. Like, I think against the White Sox. Actually, has he given up one since then?
I'm going to look at the Phil Hughes splits.
I don't know.
Yeah, he gave up two runs this month, one run last month, two runs in June.
There you
go. He's given up five runs in 34.1 innings. That's pretty good.
Crazy is the Yankees in the past week have won games started by Sergio Mitre and Chad Gaudin.
How is that guy? Because some of my Red Sox fan emailers were really upset that we didn't get Chad Gaudin. We could have claimed him ahead of the Yanks, but we didn't. And then the Yanks got him, and people were upset about this. And I was like, really?
I never heard of him before they got him. But he pitched okay against Oakland, but that's not really a great testament because it is Oakland. They're awful.
Right.
So I don't really, you know, it's not really a great basis to, you know, formulate any opinions on. I mean, he looked okay. He looked all right.
He did have a half-decent season in 07.
Did he? Yeah.
I mean, 4.43 ERA, but American League, Oakland, struck out 154, 199 innings. That's not awful. 11-13. At least he eats up innings for you, which you needed.
I didn't even know what he looked like, and I was at work last week. They had a day game, and I went on to Yahoo to watch the in-game box score, and they have pictures of the players who are pitching and the player who's at bat at that time.
Yeah.
And they brought him in from the bullpen, so he was pitching late in the game. And they had a picture of him, I guess, when he played for the Cubs, and he had this, like, long – it wasn't even like a goatee because it didn't have a mustache. It was just like this beard thing. Like this long red beard. He looked like the lead singer of Anthrax.
Ooh.
And I was like, oh my God, really? They traded for that guy? Looks like a freaking prison photo with a Cubs hat on.
Yeah.
But, you know, that's not the Yankee way. So, of course, he was clean shaven when I watched him pitch the other night in Oakland. But he seemed like he was okay. I figured that's not a game they're going to win, but they figured it was safe to pitch him against Oakland so they could give Jabba an extra day. So,
you want to talk about some potential chinks in the Yankee armor?
Sure.
Melky Cabrera kind of cooled off a little.
Yeah, he has come back to earth. Yeah, he's. I mean, he. The thing is, if they get Gardner back from the DL, they can platoon them, and both those guys between the two of them might equal one competent center fielder.
Right, but he was kind of overachieving.
He was red hot. Yeah, he was playing above his level.
Now, not quite overachieving.
No, he's probably a little tired playing every day. Wasn't intended to. So
George Posada maybe fading a little.
Yeah, every catcher does, though. Could be. He's not getting any younger and catching every day. Could be.
Not sliding that often on plates where he should slide at home plate.
Yeah, that's true.
A-Rod still gimping around a little bit, maybe?
Yeah, I mean, the thing that's pretty miraculous, actually, is that they've been doing this without A-Rod. Since he hit that home run in the 15-inning game, he's been pretty abysmal. And, you know, you don't know if it's his hip is banged up or he's just going through a cold streak. I mean, I guess it's you can play that both ways, that obviously he could be really hurt and they could be ice cold, or, you know, that could really affect their offense, obviously. But you can also say the opposite, that they've been winning in spite of his being terrible lately, that they don't need his bat necessarily because Teixeira is just that good.
Yeah.
And the resurgence of the captain.
The captain is
legitimate MVP candidate.
The captain has been really good this year.
The captain's hitting like a crisp 335. I mean, it's unbelievable.
I think it's because after I made that joke in a column about how we already had a below-average shortstop in Nick Green or whatever I said. I think
yes.
That ignited his season.
It really did. Bulletin board material.
You know, back to A-Rod.
Yes.
I have some ideas how to rattle him this weekend.
Okay.
I think every time he comes up, we play the Black Crows.
The Black Crows?
No, the Black Crows.
Oh, the Black Crows. Oh, Kate Hudson.
Yeah.
Yeah, there you go. That's a good idea.
We play, what was that song, Remedy?
Yeah.
Is that the Black Crow song?
I think so.
we just blast that with an era. Just a lot of like Chris Robinson shots.
That
I'm looking
work.
Up. Yeah, it was
it.
Remedy. And maybe some, I don't know, some clips of her kissing guys in various chick flicks, like Matthew McConaughey.
Right, I was going to say. She's dated, who was the guy? Oh, Owen Wilson. Wasn't she hot and heavy with Owen Wilson or something?
Oh, yeah, maybe play some Owen Wilson clips.
Right.
Got to be ways to rattle him.
That won't be good for A-Rod or for Owen Wilson.
Is that one of the weirdest celebrity combos that we've had as a dating couple?
Who's that? A-Rod and Owen Wilson. A-Rod and Kate Hudson?
Yeah.
Yeah, it does seem odd. Like, it really does.
What do they talk about? She's like a child of Hollywood.
Yeah.
What do they just like fly around in charter jets and just
have sex?
They're
both wealthy and famous, and they just talk about, you know, five-star restaurants and being beautiful, I guess. I don't know what they talk about.
I can't believe it's lasted this long. It's lasted like 6 months.
I know. It's the real deal. They're like really in love.
Like, would she change her name to Kate Hudson Rodriguez?
No.
How does Kurt Russell feel about this? Has Kurt Russell met A-Rod? Hey, A-Rod.
He's a big sports fan, Kurt Russell. He's been in some sports movies. And didn't they have a kid, he and Goldie Hawn, that was like some good hockey goalie, allegedly?
Oh,
it's frightening
yeah.
that I know this, but I do.
I think Kurt Russell's like, hey, A-Rod, got you a couple of Blu-rays of Miracle and Escape from New York. Thought you might enjoy them. A-Rod's like, thanks.
Yeah, exactly.
I want to know more about A-Rod and Kate Hudson. I'd love to know what they talk about. By all means, I mean, by all accounts, she is not the brightest bulb in the tree.
You know, there was an article in the New York Post the other day that I read that was all about the Yankee wives.
Yeah.
And, like, you know, that there's, like, a hierarchy of Yankee wives and that they...
Ooh.
It was all about, apparently, like, C.C. Sabathia's wife and Johnny Damon's wife and Teixeira's wife. And I think, A.J. Burnett's wife, like, they're, like, the top of the pyramid among Yankee... Oh, and Jorge Posada's wife. She's, like, the queen of the Yankee wives.
So what's her name, Jim?
I believe it's Laura Posada. And,
okay.
She's easy on the eyes, too, let me tell you.
Really?
Yeah. So,
Jorge.
Good hip Jorge. So they had this whole thing about Yankee wives, and you have to, like, get in the clique, and they apparently... They, like, shun Jeter's girlfriend. Like, she's only a girlfriend, so she's not allowed to come around, or they didn't care for her. But they've welcomed Kate Hudson with open arms, according to the New York Post, that they love her, and she's, like, just one of the regular gals and, like, sits in the players' wives section and the players' lounge or whatever, like, where the other wives are. And she's really down-to-earth and cool, so she's been, like, welcomed into the group.
Oh, I just found it online as you were talking.
Yes.
So it's Minka Kelly, Jeter's girlfriend,
yeah,
who is on Friday Night Lights, a show that you refuse to watch, although you watched all of Deadwood. Go
yes.
figure.
Yeah, they apparently aren't. They don't let her like hang around the other Yankee wives' activities.
Page Six says people are choosing sides. Hudson has earned the approval of Laura Posada and Michelle Damon.
See,
they are the queen bees of the Yankee social scene and have granted Hudson a spot in their inner circle.
Which is. I mean, and the Johnny Mrs. Damon thing is kind of funny because didn't he meet her at like the Foxy Lady or the Fuzzy Grape or something where she was working as a performer? I mean, isn't that the story?
At Hooters, it was something seedy. Yeah,
and he was married to someone else at the time, I believe.
Semantics.
and now she's like looking down her nose at others, like you know, she's like the social secretary of the Yankees' wives. Funny.
There's been visible coldness between Minka and Kate, an insider told the Post, Lachlan Cartwright.
Really?
I don't know if it's a personal thing or just an extension of the ongoing A-Rod Jeter rivalry.
That's just a Page Six thing, though. There was like a whole article in the Post about just specifically about the Yankee wives. And it's funny that A.J. Burnett and Teixeira and Sabathia's wives hold any sway because it's their first year with the team, you know?
Do you think there must be somebody that Minka Kelly dated who Kate Hudson also dated? And you know who I think it is? I bet it's John Mayer.
Oh, well, he's been around the block a couple of times.
John Mayer just circles the block.
Connecticut's own John Mayer.
You can't even say he's been around the block. He just does a sweep every week. He just goes around the block and picks up whatever.
I'm not going to kill John Mayer.
Yeah, it's a good job by John Mayer.
Great job by John Mayer.
He's got a guitar and a big head, Johnny.
No guitar down there, Johnny.
Well, that's interesting.
So the players' wives thing was like a great polygram for me, of course. I was fascinated by that. So I was reading about, you know, all the inside Yankee wives scoop, according to the New York Post.
That's the stuff we need more of.
Yeah.
I always loved that. I remember with the Celtics in the 70s, we used to sit near the wives section. And John Havlicek's lovely wife, Beth, they used to show her constantly. And Collins wasn't married, and all the other guys on the team who were married were black. Mm-hmm. And they used to constantly show Beth Havlicek, and apparently it caused all this resentment with the other wives who thought it was a whole racial thing with
right.
CBS and all this stuff. And it was like all kinds of bad blood. And I remember being like seven and just being like flummoxed by that.
Right.
But it's nice that that has now continued. You saw a little bit in the secret classic For Love of the Game when Kelly Preston goes to her first game as Billy Chappell's date.
Right.
It's a little of the iciness.
Yeah, I mean, it's
Yankee
a,
Stadium.
You know, I'm sure it's very cliquish, like anything else. If people have been there for a while, and especially if it's like a second marriage deal or something, that's got to be awkward. Player, like, drops the wife for the new wife. She comes to the game, be it baseball or football or whatever. That's got to be a little awkward.
Somebody, I forget who emailed me this joke, but when John Henry got remarried.
Yeah.
To somebody who was like 29.
Yeah.
But all of his friends are like in the 40s, 50s, and 60s, so obviously had their wives who are like from 45 to 60.
Right.
What kind of iciness do you think was there with the wives?
That's a rough one. Yeah, that was that's got to be a little awkward for Mrs. Henry.
The wives watching their husbands with like a hawk's eye.
Oh, God, yeah.
Where'd you go? I just went to get a drink. With who? With that whore!
I know, like, they go home from a party, and, like, some friend of John Henry says to his wife, like, John seems happy, huh?
Yeah.
The wife's like, what? What do you mean?
What do you mean he's happy? Are you saying you're not happy?
Exactly.
He didn't really take long to remarry, Mr. John Henry.
I was hoping the first Mrs. Henry would take him to the cleaners, and they'd have to sell off half their players, but sadly that didn't happen.
Ah, oh, come on,
Johnny. Really, I was really hoping for that.
Johnny, that's just bitterness talking.
It's true. True.
All right. So what are your predictions for this weekend?
I think the Yanks will take one out of three.
One out of three.
I think they're going to win. I think they're going to win tomorrow's game. Pettit always pitches lousy against the Red Sox and tough to beat Beckett in Fenway on Sunday. So I think Sabathia will have a game effort, but they'll lose a close one like 2-1 or 1-0. And tonight it'll probably be a high scoring game, but the Red Sox will win it in the later innings, like a 9-8, 8-7. They win it in the eighth, and Papelbon closes out the ninth. It's my prediction.
I have another prediction.
Okay.
I have a different prediction. I think you win tonight, and I think you win tomorrow night, or tomorrow day.
You don't have confidence in Penny or Tozawa?
No, I think they're both terrible. Tozawa has potential, but the problem is he doesn't get strikeouts, at least not yet. And if you're not going to strike guys out in the Yankees, that means your control has to be absolutely picture perfect.
Yeah.
Or else they're just going to be sitting there waiting for the cheese.
Right.
So my biggest fear is the Yanks win the first two, and now we're on ESPN Sunday night, Sabathia and Beckett. And
ooh, that would be an ugly crowd. The crowd would be tense and on edge.
A tense crowd, already mad that the Yankees have spent all this money on Sabathia and Teixeira and Burnett, and we spent our money on John Smoltz and Joe Schmo and Brad Penny and Luke Puke. I think that Sunday night game could be ugly. And I also would like to make another prediction. I think that game could be the longest game of all time.
Oh, yeah, that could.
I think that'll be the first 6-hour ESPN. Like, actually, Hannah Storm will be breaking into the game with Monday Morning Sports Center with Josh Elliott. It'll be the seventh inning, though. But I'm very concerned. And, in fact, you mentioned that you hope tonight's high scoring. I do, too, because I think high scoring is where it's going to go because Brad Penny's involved. So if it's high scoring, that means we scored runs in the
innings. I don't hope it's high scoring. I'm just guessing it's going to be high scoring.
Yeah, but I'm saying I hope you're right.
Oh, I see. Okay.
Because I know Brad Penny's going to give up 4 to 5 runs
so
in those first 5 minutes.
Pettit did too, right? Yeah.
Yeah. Hey, Brad, how about getting on a treadmill?
Yeah, really.
You're a professional athlete. All right, so what are you this week? Are you a 1 again?
Yeah, I feel pretty good. You?
I don't even think I can be calibrated.
Fantastic. That makes me so happy.
The Rangers really worry me.
Yeah,
I think
know.
The Rangers could pass us for wild card.
They had a 5-1
really
lead the other day against Pavano, and they blew the game. They lost 9-5. So I
know,
don't know.
But they, I joked about Francisco on Twitter last week, but or last weekend, but he has been really good this year. We're the first team that got to him.
Plus, it's 180 degrees in Texas at this time of year. I mean,
but that's what worries me, though, is they have such a home field advantage when people go there. And this Feliz that they brought up is just ridiculous, and they still have a couple bats that they can bring up, and I don't know, I'm concerned. I'm not as concerned about Tampa, because Tampa seems like they're kind of a mess.
Yeah, they're done. Joe Madden's dyeing his hair and trying stupid tricks to motivate his team.
They're a classic year after, a little too much attention, a little too much love last year, and it's kind of backfired on him. But Texas, I'm concerned. Anyway, all right, Johnny.
All right, buddy.
Thank you for being on the Subway Fresh Tech Hotline.
My pleasure.
Joe, can we hear the song?
Bill, Jacko, partners in crime, the Subway Fresh Tech Hotline.
There you go.
Excellent. Theocracy is always good.
Our friends at Theocracy. All right, Johnny, worst of luck this weekend.
See you too.
Talk to you soon.
Bye-bye.
Plug it to Santa. Whoa.
Thank you for downloading the BS Report with Bill Simmons.
Too much fun.
Check out more podcasts at the iTunes Music Store or at Podcenter at ESPNRadio.com.
Peace out.